When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's up, Bingetown? Welcome back to, finally, the second part of our recording on Invincible, Season 2, Episode 5 and 6. So it's been a long time since we talked about the first half of this season. Honestly, it's been, do you remember when that was?
Like 4 months ago.
4 months ago. So we've been on a longer hiatus than Mark was on Planet Thraxia. What we're going to do here, this is a little bit more of a kind of a wing it format for this type of show because we just love Invincible. We love talking about it. So we just wanted to get on here and just cover episodes 5 and 6. And then we'll have one more final episode that comes out 2 more weeks after 7 and 8 comes out. So today we're going over episode 5, This Must Come as a Shock. And then episode 6, It's Not That Simple. And I just got to say, it feels so good to be back. Like, there's something going on in the internet right now where people are a little upset with Invincible and the creators because they went on this huge unnecessary break. And I kind of agree, it killed a lot of the hype, but that doesn't take away from the incredible writing that we're getting. Like, this is still some of the best written stuff on TV. So as soon as we started episode 5, it just felt like I was back. Like, I needed a little bit of a recap, but it ended on such a high note, episode 4 of the season, that it just, once we like kind of rewatched that recap and just flowed right into 5, it just felt like we didn't skip a beat. There's so much to talk about, but I'll let you give your 2 cents on how we're feeling right now through episode 5 and 6.
Momentum definitely was killed during the long break. It just feels like we got 2 seasons of 4 episodes rather than 1 season of 8, which for me doesn't really satisfy my urge of Invincible content enough. Like, we're already doing this podcast, that's 2 episodes down, and then we have 1 more recording, and then we're done with Invincible. So rather than just it being done in 8 consecutive weeks, hell, even 9 if they wanted a break, like, that would have probably been the better format. So it did kill a lot of the momentum, but like you said, once we got through episode 5, I was going to say 4, but episode 5, it was incredible. The ending of episode 6 was like full on, okay, we're back to the hype, but it's annoying because, again, the hype is only going to last for 2 more weeks rather than like 6 more weeks.
They did come out and say that there will never be a gap this big in between seasons, and they're already banking episodes for season 3, and I think like the writing team is full on going just nonstop now, so hopefully they kind of learn from this process, and going forward, it just gets back to just drop the whole season. Let's not kill the momentum, because how the internet reacts is just, it bothers me so much, because people are almost writing it off now when they shouldn't be, because the quality hasn't dropped even 1%. Like, we're still there. So let's start talking about the episode, because I know we're just going to be gushing over so much of this, but I want to give a quick tiny little recap on what I looked up to about the Lizard League, because they're very important, specifically for episode 5, a little bit the end of or beginning of episode 6. But I don't remember like where we left it when we were talking about it. It's like I said, it's been months.
We were a little bit confused. What timeline are we in? Like,
yes, because we weren't, we were trying to attribute it to being part of the multiverse jumping, which it definitely wasn't. I don't think so. Like, after reading a little bit more about this, what it is that we got earlier this season, the flashback of the Queen Lizard when Nolan was young. Remember where he was wearing just the all white before he was wearing his colors and stuff. So that was the original leader, Queen Lizard. Her direct son was the heir, who was King Lizard. And all while this is going on, the Lizard League is a joke. Like, neither of these rulers are getting anything done. But and then eventually Lizard King was put into jail. He was in jail for a while. The majority of the series, he's been in jail. And that's when they were being led by the even more pathetic Supreme Lizard.
Okay, that's who it was.
Who then eventually King Lizard escapes and shoots him in the head. And that happened earlier, right? So now we're back to, I guess, like the heir of like the lineage of the Lizard League. Either way, he's just a chump. So like whatever. That's my understanding of where we're at right now. Okay. And so he is the leader. And he has some cool henchmen. I liked the design of some of the henchmen.
The Komodo Dragon was dope. I thought he himself, for being a quote unquote pathetic villain, I thought delivered some pretty cool lines when he, you know, he's facing Rex. I know we're kind of jumping the gun a little bit here, but when he's facing Rex and he's like, oh, you know, a smart opponent would wait till their opponent is, you know, near death, basically. And he comes in and he gives a great monologue. And I thought he was going to be a bigger part, honestly, based off that whole scene, but clearly not.
Well, there was a lot of things that we were pretty wrong about, specifically with, so we could say the Lizard League lump in Thaddeus, which was one of the biggest.
I think it's Thaddeus. Thaddeus,
you're right.
Sure.
No, no, you're right. It is Thaddeus.
Okay.
Sorry.
I had it in my notes as Thaddeus, and I kept writing it as Thaddeus at first.
Yeah. He was one of the best twists of the entire show. Like, that was great. So it's just so much to talk about. So I don't want to keep going on about the high level stuff. Let's get into the little bit of detail here. So how we're going to do this is we're going to start with just Invincible, picking up right on Thraxia, where it's the direct aftermath of him getting his ass beat and Nolan just got taken to jail by the other Viltrumites. So I kind of just want us to just freeform talk through everything up until he decides to take his brother back to Earth. They give him a ship. We even see Nuozol again, like the guy who brought him here. Ignore my pronunciation, but this whole early chunk of basically setting him up to come back to Earth, and he's been here for like 2 months now. So
I mean, immediately when the child was introduced, I was like, I knew right away that I wanted Mark to be maybe not, definitely not the father, but I wanted him to play an important role in the child's life. And episode 5 just immediately has the mother of the child, who is now way older in age after the 2 months, since their lifespans are a lot shorter than humans. I thought this was a perfect opportunity for Mark to now have, you know, like a sidekick that I think is going to be badass. I like the idea that the kid is going to be able to grow at a rapid rate, because that just makes me think by next season, he's going to be at least a teenager. And at that point, hopefully his powers, his Viltrumite half kind of kicks in by that point. Mm-hmm. Just great for Mark, just in terms of growth, just him as a character. He has been through a lot so much, and this is kind of like a light, if you want to call it that. I know it's like a heavy burden and a responsibility to have a child, but I think this is the half-brother is a good light for him and his mother, to be honest, even though, you know, the Debbie, we always say the Debbie storyline is not our favorite. That's, and it kind of continue. It has purpose now with the kid, I think. So I'm more interested in her and how she raises the kid. Like, that's fine. But up until that point, Debbie has not been one of our favorite characters, just in terms of her plot isn't that all that interesting. It's very generic. So, but otherwise, great opportunity for Mark, I think. And a great opportunity for the show to introduce a badass new character.
That's exactly where I was going to go. Like, the whole, we shit on Debbie a lot last in the first half of the season 2, and rightfully so. Like, compared to all the other cool things that are going on, she did have the more boring storyline, but it was also the most real, I guess, because she's dealing with getting over Omni-Man.
We don't like real in an anime.
No. But this will be a more fun storyline for her going forward, because she's going to be definitely like a caretaker for this kid, her mixed with that nanny that Cecil sent them. So that's going to, what I picture is going to be her main storyline for the next couple episodes. She's done with the grieving phase, which was tough to watch. So now I think we're hopefully better days ahead for her. Mm-hmm. But like, that's kind of what we get here, right? Like, Mark decides that he's going to take his brother home. He goes and meets Debbie. I'm just going to keep calling him Oliver, because he gets his name later in the episode, who's named after Mark's grandfather. I guess it's just Debbie's dad, which is, he likes the name, and that's just going to work going forward. So Oliver is his brother. So
was not crazy on the name Oliver.
Yeah, I don't, it wasn't cool or anything, but whatever. Just so Cecil makes a lot of good points here, because he eventually, like he does with everything else, gets his claws into whatever he can. And he talks about the idea that it's not expected that Debbie should be raising Omni-Man's other kid. And he's literally purple, so it's not like they can just send him to a daycare or put him up for adoption or whatever. But Cecil, I thought, was actually really good these two episodes. I won't say we hate him, but he is clearly sketchy, but he's so freaking needed to facilitate all these random plot points. He's like the glue of the show, and I felt like it really showed through in these two episodes, like how he's connecting.
He's literally in everyone's story. He's literally in everyone's story. He pops up, and I get both sides. Like, I get why Cecil obviously wants to play a part in helping raise this kid. I mean, obviously, he's probably also worried about the threat of him becoming a potential Omni-Man. Like, I get all that, but then there's also Debbie. I get her side, where Cecil has just been in her life so much and just controlling her and just making her a pawn for him. And I get that she doesn't want to do it. Like, when I'm watching the episode, I personally wanted Debbie to have the kid. I didn't want Cecil to raise him, even though, again, I don't think that would necessarily be a bad option. I just think I'd rather Oliver be at home with Debbie.
Yeah, no, I'm in agreement there. And I think that's what's going to happen. It's just with Cecil, I remember a lot of our conversations seemed to show him in a more pessimistic light in the first half of the season, but it's kind of feeling like
he's just turned
it around a little bit in these two episodes. No,
I think he's just a realist. I think he's just, everything is for the good of the world, whether he's the kind of guy that would sacrifice thousands of lives to save a million, you know?
Like,
I just think that's
less
how
likely
is.
To think that he's going to be a real villain at any point anymore.
I don't think he's I feel like he's gone past the point of becoming a villain. I just think he's just so intently good that it makes him sometimes do questionably bad things.
And he's like not empathetic, especially Donald stuff. Yes. Like he's just kind of is like objective about everything, which makes him hateable at some points.
We have to get a Cecil backstory at some point, and that's when I feel like all the questions and quote unquote hatred that we have for him is going to be just completely squashed, because he has that grueling scar on his face, so we have to know where that came from.
I always mess it up. What's the line from Christopher Mannix?
We just learned that Christopher Mannix was the voice actor for Cecil.
That's his name in Hateful Eight. I forget what his actual name is, the actor, but he's the man. He actually kind of looks like him a little bit.
Walton Goggins.
That's his name, Walton Goggins?
Yeah.
Walton
Goggins.
I didn't know that, but either way, it makes me like Cecil a little bit more.
Yeah, definitely.
Speaking of Cecil, the reason this is important, I'm bringing this up now, is because Mark, after catching up with his mom and bringing Oliver there, he goes back to college. Of course, he has to make his rounds. He has to see William, his roommate. He has to go check in on Amber. And I didn't take too much away from the William thing, except the fact that he's on probation because he was gone for 2 months. And there's no way around that. Like, you're screwed in college if you just disappear for 2 months. But the more important thing is when he goes to see Amber, that's when this Cecil conversation happens. And you really find out how much like he's really keeping track of Debbie, because he goes on to say that they're always watching her, and there's a couple of keywords that make them tune in and start watching a little bit more. So whenever he showed up, whatever he was talking about with Oliver, like, that must have triggered something for Cecil's organization, and they knew all the answers. Like, Mark didn't have to catch him up on anything. It's basically what the whole purpose of this scene is. But at this point, like, Cecil gives him a little bit of rope, like a little bit of leeway, because the plan was he was just going to go and take Oliver from Debbie. But Mark convinces him, give him a day, like, he's going to figure all this out. And Cecil actually listens. So he's not treating him like Omni-Man completely, but he is a little mad that he's not listening to his orders.
Empathy's creeping through.
A little bit, yeah. I think Mark's deserving of it because he keeps helping everybody. But anyway, do you have any takeaways from his first reunion with Amber? Like, he meets the friends awkwardly and they didn't think he was real.
It doesn't do it for me, the whole love story. And I think it's supposed to be at that point with their relationship. I think everyone as a viewer is probably on team, okay, let's get these two split up at this point. Season one, Amber's grown a lot. Obviously, everyone and their mothers, I think, on the internet hated Amber for so long and how she treated Mark and not really being understanding of the situation that he's a part of being a superhero. Mm-hmm. But here we do get that forgiving side of her. And it's good to see that she's also growing. But I just don't care all that much, to be honest.
I'm totally with you. We were giving her some flowers in our season two stuff because, like you're saying, she had character growth and she wasn't as bad.
I don't know why I just can't get bought into her as a character.
Because love Adam Eve. So
I guess that might be it. But
I want them together more than I want anything in the show.
Like, she's not a bad character. Like, in a vacuum, I think Amber's a fine character. I just don't know what it is in her place in this show that just, it doesn't really do it for me quite yet.
And I don't know what she'll do if they're not together. Is she going to be out of the show?
She's going to be the guy in the chair, like her and William. I don't really know.
Maybe, but like she's a huge
smart
actor,
like, we know,
too. Zazie Beetz.
Yeah.
She's like a really big actor. So I don't know.
And we know she's like super smart because she says, I don't even attend class, but I still get A's essentially.
Failed something this class, but that was because of the.
She didn't try either.
Yeah, her grandfather passed and she took it pretty hard, but she is a genius. Like, she, or not a genius, but
if
she's
anything,
very
William's
competent.
Place in this show is more of a question because she could be the guy in the chair, but William, but he has his own story now with Rick and everything. But yeah, Amber, the whole reunion, I didn't feel sad. If anything, I was happy. Everything was awkward because then, yeah, like you said, it just creates an opportunity for Mark and Eve now. Hopefully,
but who knows? I feel like it went the opposite way towards the bat when they started getting relationship advice and stuff, but we'll talk about that in a little bit. Mm-hmm. Let's take a quick hiatus to go over Donald's couple of scenes here. I don't know when the best time to put these couple back-to-back scenes are, so let's just talk about them now because they're pretty isolated, but it's basically him just having an identity crisis. And were we wrong as hell about what what the conclusion of what is going on
so
with
much
Donald
more
is?
Simple than what we made it.
Yes, we were saying clones, like different dimensions, but it was straight up the fact that in a really coolly explained way, Omni-Man's body being near him when the explosion went off protected him a little bit enough to have his brain still function. And they literally just took his brain and put it into a cyborg, which was, I think, only possible because of the Sinclair storyline where Cecil got that tech
from him.
Which that's awesome. Just a, amazing writing. Like the, it, that's just so well thought out when you, they do things like
every,
that.
Every villain of the week character we've been introduced to is not a villain of the week. They have mattered and have made an impact in the show, whether it's good or bad. Like the Lizard League being villains of the week, literally just killed Duplicate. You know,
the Martians are super important. That was a villain of the week for a second. It's so good because like I can't wait until they bring back the Atlanteans, whatever was going on down there.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Machine Head's still running out there too. The guy, like the mob boss from season one, who Mark has to team up with that villain, the black guy who can make his skin super hard and
infiltrate
the building. Like Machine Head just teleports. Like he's not arrested or anything. I'm pretty sure he just disappears. So there's like villains floating out there everywhere, and they're all going to come back at some point.
Infinite possibilities. Just keep reusing these people. It feels like One Piece in that way, where they're just going to keep bringing things up.
Yep.
Okay, so that's Donald's whole episode, is him just having an identity crisis. He also eventually freaks out at Cecil, and that whole explanation comes. And
I get the whole freak out. I do. But at the same time, wouldn't you also just be like, dude, I'm a fucking robot. I can just
He's stronger.
Yeah, but he's not seeing the positives here. Like he should be thankful that he's alive and now kind of has superpowers. But
Now you're sounding like Cecil.
I know. But I just think I get it, though. He did watch himself die and he like remembers these memories. So that would have an effect on you. But I'm just thinking, come on, look at the positives just a little bit. You're pretty badass now. You're going to be out in the field a lot more.
Like, I don't know where his storyline goes. It seems like he's going to be invested in monitoring Rick, too.
Is he going to be bad?
He could be.
He could flip. Because I think we're going to have a parallel between Rick and Donald's story where I could see it going, you know, Donald ends up becoming a villain and Rick is the good guy of the two, like, cyborg robot humans, you know. I could see that happening, but all in due time, Donald's definitely not taking it well, and there's no signs of him taking it well anytime soon.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to see, because he's definitely like shaking and stuff at the last time we see him. But all right, what we're going to do now is the next time we're going to really pick up with Mark is right before he's about to go to space. So let's catch up with all the Guardians and what was going on with them while Mark was at Thraxia, because Cecil goes on to tell Invincible that there was this awesome looking villain, Omnipotence, that we get like two shots of that was fucking up a lot of the Guardians. There were so many different Guardians there, too, that like we didn't know who they were. Like it wasn't just the Guardians. There was like all these other superheroes. We didn't get to see much of it, but there was a huge fight apparently. And so Cecil was saying like, yeah, you might have think everything was okay, but there was shit happening here. Takeaway moment of that flashback is Black Samson sees Shapesmith turn into Martian for a second, turn into a Martian for a second. That plays into this next scene where we can just keep talking through of back at the base, Immortals putting everybody through the trainings and like Rudy's being all protective with Monster Girl. Like that's still continuing from the early part of the season. But when Cecil shows up and explains there's a foreign ship coming from Mars heading straight to Earth with a ton of biomass on it, and they basically need to go out there and stop it. But he's trying to get information first. And it turns out basically everybody knew Shapesmith was a Martian except for Black Samson. And that would have been shitty writing if Cecil didn't know. Yeah. Alki even said out loud, he's like, there's no way they wouldn't know. And Cecil's like, of course we knew. So I like that little bit of writing. But yeah, the Sequids are on the way, man. And we found out that this was all basically only possible because Shapesmith left an astronaut to die there, and then they basically rallied the Martians of what was left there, and now they're just coming over to Earth to take over. Because the Sequids, the important part about their species is they can't get through Martian skin, so they're safe around the Sequids. But because there was a human there and now they're just trying to get to other humans, it's going to be a massive problem, because if they get onto Earth, they're just going to take over like a virus.
Yeah, it's a hive mind concept, and it's so weird that the Martians just casually have these things as their servants. Like, I get that you aren't affected by them, but again, on the chance that someone does arrive on your planet, now you just have an army of Sequids just going for that person, you know? It is cool, though. It's just building into the space lore of everything, and I the Sequids honestly proved themselves to be, and still are,
scary as hell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's only a couple scenes that I have, like a question I guess about, but we'll get there when we get there. But the Sequids, I like them. I like the way people look when they're possessed, like the black eyes and the creepy smiles. Like they look really badass. Like the astronaut immediately goes just from some no-name white guy to like immediate threat, and
I never thought we were gonna see him again. I truly thought if anything was gonna be a villain of the week, it was gonna be that Martian storyline, but that came into play like right away. It's in such a big way. Like this is such a key moment for a lot of the Guardians, especially because of what happens on Earth at this moment, or at this part of the episode. they basically are planning on what they're going to do. And everyone that can breathe in space or anyone that's immune to the sequid attacking their skin is basically going to go up to the spaceship and fight them. While the B squad is what I've been calling them in my notes, which would be Duplicate, Rex, and Shrinking Ray. Mm-hmm. They were going to stay and guard Earth. He even makes a joke like, what are the chances that two crazy earth-threatening events happen at the same time? And of course that was going to happen.
The only thing I'm like on the rewatch going back and thinking is, why did Bulletproof go into space? They give a specific reason why he went and not.
I think it's just because they can't get through his skin because it's bulletproof. Like, I think that's his whole power.
That's okay.
Yeah,
because I'm just thinking he did nothing in space.
Nothing.
And he could have easily helped out a lot with them same on the with ground
Black
because they
Samson,
only have
Samson, right? Like, they both could.
Yeah, same thing. I was like, why is Black Samson going to Mars too? But yeah. Bulletproofs makes more sense than Black Samson. Robot's
that
fine
was
because
be it. Well, he was needed.
We need him to make the bomb or whatever you want to call that and help terminate them. But again, just it's still weird that they would bring Bulletproof and Black.
No, Samson. I'm totally with you, and it is. I thought good, interesting writing that the only two people that were susceptible to the sequids get possessed for a second, being Adam Eve and Robot when he's not in a suit.
That was like my one question is like, why did that happen?
So, okay, we'll talk about that in a second because we're almost at that point. After the plan gets set of who's going to go to space and who's not, the last thing that happens is Rex goes and recruits mopey Adam Eve because she's like living with her parents. She's being all depressed because
to go into space.
Yes, exactly. Because she doesn't think she's doing enough good, essentially. And Rex talks her out of it and she actually agrees. So I'm hoping that storyline's done because Adam Eve, like, okay, she messed with like a playground that almost hurt somebody. But like Rex says, she is so in the green for helping out humanity for how much she does. Like, she should not feel bad about that. Mm-hmm. Like, she's one of the best heroes on Earth. She's one of the most overpowered heroes on Earth. So, of course, they're going to need her in space. And she agrees to go with them. At this point, we can just split the two buckets into space and then the Lizard League attacking. What do you want to go through first?
Let's do space first, because okay. I think we have more of a cliffhanger with the Lizard League. But I will say, I hope that Eve and Rex do not work out.
Dude, they were getting very the worst like thing that ever happens.
They were getting
show.
Very close, and we get the whole Rex thing after the incident. And it's like, I don't support this at
so
all.
I have a thought about that. And it's like in the hospital scene, there's a quote that comes up, and we'll talk about that when we're the later part of this episode. So As they're about to set off for space, like Mark gets recruited directly by Cecil after finding out that Debbie gave up all the comic books, which is just the worst. Like, that sucked that she did that. Anyway, Mark agrees, like, of course I have to go. They're right there. They're going to destroy Earth. When they go into space, like, they basically the Martian or the Shapesmith is so like comedic in his timing of when he tells people things. He's like, oh yeah, they're going to shoot us with missiles if we get too close. And they shoot him with missiles like right there. Mm-hmm. And Adam Eve is the only reason they all survive. She makes the bubble into space and they actually can get into the giant Martian warship. And I thought that moment was actually really cool because they're just stuck in space and Mark just like, anybody that can fly, go, 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 go. Yeah, that was like a cool
physics.
Moment.
It's like actual physics that they're putting into the show.
So. They like thought about it a little bit, but I'll just open this up. You can bring up any scenes you want because this is just going to be a huge chunk of the podcast is us talking through this because they just go in, they see the Martians.
Yeah, and
that's attack.
It's not much. Yeah, really happens on the ship. Like, they get into a struggle, which is the big story here, obviously. But the one thing that I want to point out is Mark pushing Immortal to take control of the bomb that they're going to use to knock out the sequids that are on the hive mind of the astronaut.
Right.
And it just felt a little out of character for Mark. I mean, on purpose, though. We've known from the episode one of season two intro that Mark in 99% of the universes are evil. And I think with all the emotions that he's been going through with seeing his dad, getting the shit kicked out of him by his dad, his dad coming alive, all that stuff is just it's culminating and it's building into him. And he's just a little aggressive here. I mean, he's really standing his ground here against Immortal. Like, he shoves Immortal and is like, give me the bomb. Just lays it all on the line. Just like, I'm stronger and faster than you. Mm-hmm. I need to do this. And Immortal at first is like, very pissed about the idea of it because he's still struggling with his old thing with Omni-Man in his head. But Mark does pull it off. It just feels like a little bit of that evil is just like coming out here, and we do kind of see it when they're escaping as well. I mean, granted, he doesn't kill any Martians, but damn, he fucks them up a little bit. And all that scene and then the one him pushing Immortal just really resonate with me of like, damn, Mark is not the loving and just like easygoing kid that we remember in season
one. Got a little
bit
of an edge now.
Yeah, exactly. He's a little edgy.
I agree. I kind of defended it when we watched it for the first time, but I just, after rewatching the second time through, it did feel weird. But I love how Immortal reacts when he just basically says, just don't fail.
Yeah.
Like, that was a cool moment.
Oh, definitely.
But I agree. I don't know why he, like, attacked Immortal for it.
He didn't have to shove him. He could have said, yo, throw it here. Like, I'm faster and stronger. Get me there.
Exactly. That would have felt better. But I can't defend it because you're right. I felt weird about it the second time I watched it.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, there's a couple of cool things that happen here. I love when non-Viltrumites, like not Mark or Omni-Man, show their competency at like this level. Like, we had Robot's always competent. Rudy's always competent. Like, he creates the EMP that's important for this. Like, he can knock them out like with a concussive blast.
That was in his suit as well. Like, he not only had the EMP, but he also had one in his suit, it seemed like.
Yeah. And then some other things that were cool that really happened was, I loved Shapesmith in this entire fight. Like, because his skin's impenetrable by the sequids, he could do cool things. Like, he was grabbing them in like a huge hand and squishing them. When he made the little dome of himself to cover them for the last couple of minutes was cool, because they can't get through. So all of that's cool that they just shot. Shapesmith's actually stronger than I gave him credit for. So assuming he stays good, like, he might be a mainstay for the Guardians going forward.
The only thing he's really lacking is just like combat experience. Like, if you were to teach him martial arts, I feel like that would really put him over the edge.
And he's hilarious too. So like, I want him around always.
Yeah.
Let me see. Anything else?
He's a better comic relief to me than Rex. Rex does have some, I will say, I've always kind of like shitted on Rex a little bit, but Rex does have some good comedic moments. But I feel like Shapesmith is just more of a stable comedic source.
I think he's way funnier than Rex.
Yeah.
I will say Rex had a good 2-episode run here, though, compared to the past. Yeah. But I think back to your question you mentioned a little bit ago, what happened was Adam, Eve put the bubble around whoever like survived.
It was
just her and Robot. Yeah, you're right. It was like the last
Martian Shepherd. Like recontracts to his normal form. And then I forget, it was like passed out or something.
The second time watching through, I caught it. You could see there were two.
Yeah, creeping up behind
inside the bubble, and they just got caught because Adam Eve is only, she's human, like skin wise, so she can get taken over. And then, of course, Rudy without his suit. So you were just wondering why they were able to get taken over?
No. My question is, like, what was the point of them getting taken over? It's a 5-second interaction that happens. Right. They get knocked out, and then it's like, okay, everything's dandy. The only reason I'm bringing it up and questioning it is because I think of the ending of episode 6, where the astronaut himself had a sequid in him. I don't know if that sequid was always hiding inside him, or if it was they procreated while controlling him and it was just birthed inside of him. So in my head, I'm thinking, okay, in the moment, first time watching, I'm like, wow, they got took over and then just immediately incapacitated. Immediately. What was the point of that? But I'm thinking, maybe if they are able to create themselves in human bodies, like, maybe they are still
in,
maybe there's
Rudy.
Yeah.
Oh, that would suck. But it could be.
Or and it didn't even present like an opportunity for them to show us like the sequids can use Eve's ability.
Yeah.
Like, she was just struggling. Like, she was just kind of like throwing a hissy fit, you know. So
no, you're right. The more you talk about it, the
it
more
was just something that I just know
weird.
Yeah, it was, again, like, if it wasn't like 5 seconds, like, if maybe Eve had started using her powers and like, okay, now the sequids we know can use their powers and it makes them more formidable. But here is just quick seconds. So it's just something I feel like it's going to come back. And I know they make a reference to it later on. She's like, oh, I'm still cleaning sequid ooze out of my ears. But I think it's more than that, personally. I'd rather go that way. If nothing amounts to it, whatever. I'm overthinking it, but it's just something that I caught my eye.
No, I'm happy you brought that up because it did feel weird. There's a couple of weird writing decisions that happened in these 2 episodes, but nothing that kills any bit of enjoyment.
No, absolutely not, no.
So after the climax, which, again, we're underselling it because we're talking about it so quick, but in reality, it was a lot of action, not a lot of things we can really talk about. But after that gets settled, the Martians want to kill Shapesmith for basically causing all this to happen. Mm-hmm. And Invincible makes the decision that we're not going to let him die. He's part of our crew now, and turns into this quick little chase scene. And this is totally where I agree that I don't know what the hell the decision was to have Mark just basically like slowly just kill the other Martians.
Yeah.
He threw him into space. They could probably breathe, but still, like, I don't understand how that wasn't just a death sentence for everything he just did there, which feels out of character.
That was the main note that I took away from that scene, is like, while maybe, yes, he didn't kill any of them, but going forward, if this is a storyline, if the Martians, which they will definitely certainly come back, I think at some point, they're just going to view Invincible as an enemy. They're not going to see him as a hero. At first, we were like, holy fuck, he's just killing all these people. But then you see him floating in space.
Like,
so it
moving
takes
their mouths
away.
And stuff. Like,
yeah, so it I takes think, away, but I really just think that it's the only reason this is relevant is to just now he's made an enemy of the Martians.
Yeah. Them housing Shape Smith was going to make him an enemy either way. So I guess it didn't matter, but yeah. That's fine. So the last thing that happens before we'll jump over to the Lizard Leak is Immortal and Mark shake hands. So there's that little bit of respect.
Yeah, that was dope.
That they gained. Yeah. And I really, the more I think about it, like Immortal a lot, like he's the only one from the old guard, right? Like he's the only one from the original episode one that survived. And it's just funny because he's so clearly supposed to look like Wolverine and immortal, like Wolverine's immortal. Like he's immortal. I mean, he has the flying power, which is a little bit different, but it's just funny because it's just, it's just like a knockoff Wolverine that can fly, basically.
Yep, exactly.
Okay, so let's go over to the Lizard League led by Lizard King. King Lizard. Mm-hmm. This stuff was shocking to me. It almost was like a Game of Thrones moment. And then they kind of reverted a little bit into episode six where they saved a couple of them. But I am proud of them for killing an OG in this storyline where that's like a point in the favor of the Lizard League. Like they were a little bit competent here because they end up killing Duplicate. And it's just something I didn't expect from like these supposed to be joke league members. Their whole plan is just break into where the weapons are and start. They have the ability to start nuking different major cities. So it's just like a very basic vanilla storyline here by design. We have our B squad who gets pulled in by Cecil to come in here, and they're confident. And they're like this whole fight scene. They're Rex is making jokes and shit.
Yeah, first one to die, order this the pizza or something like that. Just like something stupid. And yeah, I mean, I was getting flashbacks of episode one, you know, just when Omni-Man's going on that rampage and killing all of the original Guardians of the Globe. Yeah. Like these are the moments that I live for in Invincible when there's just a huge fight and anyone besides Mark is pretty much up for the chopping block. Mm-hmm. And these fights are just so good because I go into this, like I already see the Martians kind of having their way, or not the Martians, the Sequids having the way with our space squad. And so on Earth, we're dealing with the Lizard League. I'm like, okay, this is nothing going to be a problem here. But the Komodo Dragon ended up being the one that was like so strong compared to everyone else. Like he's the one that actually takes down,
right?
One. Like the other one, like I think the girl's name was Iguana. She doesn't really do anything. Mm-mm. And the other no-named lizard gets completely pieced up by Shrinking Ray in a second. Yeah. But Komodo Dragon was just awesome. The way that Kate dies was just such a mind fuck because, you know, she's struggling and she's asking for help, but the other two are occupied. And it's like, is this going to happen? Is this going to happen? And then it's the final two clones smashed together. And it's like, this is going to fucking happen.
That like blew my mind, especially because she was like, her brain was like out and she was like moving a little bit and twitching. It was just so hard to watch that moment.
And then Shrinking Ray goes down. And dude, it's like,
she had a great kill on the one that did nothing. When she like went into his head and like kind of blew up and popped his eye out.
Yeah.
Like I was proud of Shrinking Ray for getting some bodies there too. I thought she was also going to die. I did not believe that Rex was going to die.
Yeah. So at this point, I don't know. I think at this point, after Shrinking Ray goes down, I thought Rex was going to die. I thought they were all just going to get wiped out and that was going to be it for them. And because Rex had kind of had his turn around with his Kate or with his talk to Adam Eve, so I thought truly he had come full circle and this was his time to die.
It would have been nice, honestly.
Obviously the duplicate kill was A+, all in for that. Shrinking Ray I can buy surviving. Mm-hmm. That's fine,
but let's talk about that for a second though, because that was one of the coolest moments as well. Is she goes inside him and
tries expanding.
Rex makes the quip, she doesn't stay small. And I thought that was going to be the death of the Komodo Dragon. But then he just like basically just uses all of his muscles to just crunch her and like spits out the blood of her. That was gruesome as hell. Like there, you don't see that in TV. Mm-hmm. And it's crazy.
And again, because he's inside her, I can't see what she's looking like getting crushed. But I'm fine with her.
She got fucked up though.
Yeah, she got fucked up. She's in a coma still, it seems like, I think. So that's all quote unquote good. But Rex taking the bullet to the head is something that I'm still like, I don't know how because again, we already have said it. We're not the biggest fans of Rex, so him getting that small redemption in the previous episode is good and could have led to a full circle moment death for him here, but he lives. And I'm just, the only explanation to me is that it's just, I guess he's a superhuman and is just stronger than the average human and can, I guess, take a bullet to the brain.
And had his whole arm just cut off.
That's fine. Like,
yeah, that's doable.
You can survive that. I'm not trying to take away either two of Rex's moment because even though I was like, why is he alive? Him kicking the shit out of King Lizard was like so satisfying. The way he was like using the bone of his.
Yeah. He's just like punching him with the freaking
stuff. It was so badass and so satisfying. Like, I loved it. But the whole time I'm thinking, how is he alive?
Yeah.
So that kind of did, I guess, take away a little bit from him.
The sad thing is, I don't think we're going to get an explanation. Like, how are they going to really explain that to us? I will also give him his flowers too, because he caught a body or two with his exploding powers.
He kills the iguana bitch. Yes. He slices her in half.
Yep.
So good.
Has he always used those rods of explosions? Is that how he always has fought?
When I picture him, I picture the balls. Like,
That's what I thought, like season one stuff. Yeah. But either way, like, I guess I'm happy that he's alive. If it turned into him and Adam Eve, though, I'm so mad.
So mad. Yeah, no. We don't root for that.
Yeah, no, but it was gross. Like, just seeing the brain
just love
leak. It was like, squeak.
The gruesomeness of the show is what definitely elevates it to another tier for me. I know people who are comic book readers have issues with it. And like, I'll see the comparisons of like, oh, this is what it looked like in the comics versus the show. And it's like, okay, I get where you're coming from. I watched this show, and knowing it's even animated, I still cringe at these blood shots, and it's just, I have no complaints for it. It's gruesome to me. Like, there are eyeballs popping out of people's faces and teeth are mangled. Like, I have no complaints, but it's funny just because I get it too from the anime side of things. Like, when we watch anime, they're always censored a little bit from manga counterparts do. So I get it, but I'm not ever going to complain about the gruesomeness that this show has.
Yeah. And it's going to be crazy because I'm pretty sure they're going forward with the live action, which is already weird because you know about that. They're going to do the live action. I think it's not like officially greenlit, but there's a lot of plans to make an Invincible live action. What's the point? Like, we're doing the story the right way right now, but either way.
And also Rex getting blown in the head. Now I'm thinking about it is just very symbolic to the themes of these past episodes. It feels like so. Rick and Donald got their brains implanted into robots. Rex got his brains blown out. Mm-hmm. There was one other reference to brains. Oh, the Sequids take over your brain. Like, it's all brain related. So again, I'm just trying to, I guess, make excuses. Like, I hope that they kind of come around and give us a reason. Maybe Rex was always stronger than what he let on to be, but it was weird.
That's just thinking about it too, though, like duplicate, like what a cool power. And it just sucks she's gone because that affects Immortal so much because that's the girlfriend. Like,
the eulogy that it gave at the funeral was incredible because he's like, her powers were a curse. Like, you are meant to experience death over and over and over again, but she never viewed it as a curse. She viewed it as a superpower that she could turn and use for good, which was just a cool concept. Like you're saying, it's just her power on paper does seem cool, but to have that power is probably taking on a lot more responsibility and, you know, mental fortitude than the average person. It was great. I thought Immortal, and then the Immortal seems more like human and more empathetic towards everyone else around him. Not necessarily directly after because he fights Alan, but like, this will be good for him growing long term.
And I like the Black Samson moment coming up and like consoling him after the speech. That's what we're just going to go through now anyway. It was interesting to see him say, like, I've had so many loves in my life, but why does it feel like this? Is Mark having like an impact on him a little bit, like changing him for the first time in a long time? Maybe that's part of it. But either way, I'm team like keep the Immortal in the show as much as possible. He's such a good part of the show. He's like probably my favorite Guardian because Eve's doesn't count and neither does Mark.
Yeah, I would agree. It's not like Immortal has been shown to be, you know, all that nice of a guy, but I'm with you. I just, maybe it's more so I'm drawn to his power and the fact that he has the knowledge of thousands of years at his disposal than everyone else.
Yeah. Okay. So let's keep going a little bit. We have, after the A squad returns back to Earth and they save the day and they already found out about, you know, the B squad getting their asses beat, Mark has to go around, do the apology tour, of course, like catch up with Amber again. They have that weird little coffee date, which I say weird, but I write in parentheses in my notes, yay, because I want that weirdness to happen. I wanted them to start laying the foundation for them to potentially break up, but it doesn't seem like it's going to go that way because they're both just like thinking that they're failing each other. And we get this in the form of them going for advice to Adam Eve and Art a little bit later. I just don't know how I want this to really, how it can play out in a way that doesn't piss a lot of people off. And
because I can't tell which way it's going to go because I know. You know, the whole time they're having these talks with their individual people, Art and Eve, it's like, we're not meant to be. It's just not working out. Like, it's like, okay, great. Now tell them that, okay, you tried it. It's not going to work. But then they're both like, okay, really try and make it work. And it's like,
it just feels repetitive a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. I think you should just peel off the Band-Aid. Obviously, it's been, they've probably been dating for many months, almost maybe even a year at this, if not
a year. Because they're only a couple months into college, 2 months.
They started dating right before graduation, probably. So yeah, I mean, a few months, but I feel like that's long enough for them to realize like Mark's not going to be around all the time.
Yeah.
And this is just not going to work. And I know that Mark means well. Neither of them in the wrong. They are both fine to feel that, like, or right to feel these ways. It's just not meant to work. That's it at the end of the day.
Timing. Yeah. All that's important. I agree. Rick gets put back into the story here. Donald brings him. He has that weird moment. Probably nothing to really talk about for this episode. Mm-hmm. Then what happens is Mark goes and visits Rex. And this is probably what we were alluding to earlier, or at least I kind of hinted at, is because he kind of divulges all the Amber information here off screen, I think, is when it really happens, because he's like, oh, why are you being so weird? And then Mark tells him, kind of lays all the stuff out there for him, because he goes on to tell Eve in the next scene that Mark and Amber are fighting a little bit. And that is the only saving grace for me, because it felt like she lit up a little bit, or like she was asking questions about it.
I think that's a better way to put it. Like, I wouldn't say she lit up at the idea of them fighting. She was definitely saddened by the news, but you're right. Like, yes.
Yeah.
The fact that she was asking questions makes me think that she's attentive of Mark.
But then it immediately gets destroyed, because in the next scene, well, I guess right before that, it was like an awkward moment between Mark and Eve after he was done visiting Rex and like finding out he's going to have a full recovery and a new hand and all that stuff. Remember, he walks by her in the hallway and it's awkward. And Eve's like, okay, bye, I guess.
Yeah.
And then her clocking it. So
I think it's only awkward because probably him and Rex were talking about Amber. And so he sees Eve and is feeling these emotions of maybe having a crush on her, and is like, I gotta go to my real girlfriend and see her.
I want it so badly, and if I'm a bad person for rooting for that, I don't care. I guess directly what happens after that is the advice parallel scene. So I'll let you bring up whatever you want to do here, if you like anything with between Art and Mark or even Amber, which I kind of like that she had to like hike out and find Amber's treehouse, which I still think is the coolest thing ever.
Yeah. Not too many comments. I just like the cinematography of how I always like when they go back and forth like that. And it's just it plays into the other's experience. I always think that's really cool. Mm-hmm. The only big thing really is that Art gives Invincible the books,
the backup comics, which is really important. And I should have mentioned this off the top before Amber shows up to the treehouse. Cecil tries to recruit Eve again. She says no. It feels more like a possibility that's going to happen sooner rather than later.
And her conversation with Rex obviously had already happened. So she probably was already thinking about coming back. And then Cecil's extra speech on top of what Rex had already said probably is going to push her.
She still said no, but I do think like by season three, middle of season three, she will be a guardian again.
Or if not, like whatever big fight happens at the end of the season, Eve's going to be like, okay, I'm in.
Yeah.
And like that's
push her back in. Yeah. Exactly. I think that's where it's going. But yeah, my only other notes I had on these scenes is I was booing Eve for giving the advice to get back with. Yeah. I was like, come on, Eve, you could just,
You know, you have a crush.
Yeah. So anything else between Art or Eve in their conversations with the couple?
Nah, Art's the man though. I really like him. The way he comes in and Vince was like, I need to talk to you. And he's like, girl problems. He's like that obvious. It's like
such a good ear just to have. And he's like the man. Yeah.
I'm interested to see though, because whenever I think of Art, I do honestly think of Omni-Man. So I'm just curious to just as a question, just posing it out there, just if Omni-Man and Art are ever going to see each other again. Like, I feel like that would be a crazy interaction. Just Omni-Man.
Yeah. Like
talking to Art, like I did all this shit and I kind of regret it.
And Art knows it all.
Because everybody knows about
Omni-Man at this point. You're right. The next scene that happens here is he starts going through the comics. Mm-hmm. And the two main things that we see are the Infinity Ray from the first comic and then the Ragnars on the high gravity planet. So two thoughts I have here are, one, the Infinity Ray is insanely overpowered.
I hope we get more physics about it, though. I want to like
it literally will just go until it like hits a black hole is my assumption, because when the guy shoots it, it hits the star and then the star explodes. Like, that's the only way.
Yeah.
So if you're going to use the Infinity Ray, he goes on to say in the story, like, you need to have like the mind for it, because it's not just a weapon you could just use,
because you're going
to
blow up a solar
Everything.
System. Probably.
Yeah, literally. It's a whack concept. But the takeaway from these two comics that he ends up coming to the realization with Alan a little bit later, which I'm jumping ahead about for, is that these are the weaknesses of the Viltrumites, basically. So Alki was saying this, and like I guess I agree with it the more I think about it, but do you think at some level they're going to get Ragnars and bring them to use them as like an army against the Viltrumites? Because that sounds like the most badass war ever.
Like, how do you tame something like that, though? And then how do you get an army of something that seems, at least to me, so violent in nature?
Yeah.
How do you get control of thousands of them? And then I'm also thinking, okay, what if we try to bait the Viltrumites to get to that planet? But at the same time, it's like the Viltrumites are probably already aware of that planet. They would never go near it in the first place. So,
and imagine how strong they would be on a planet without gravity. They're literally going to be anime characters.
That's what I want to see. I do want to see at least one Ragnar not hindered by the gravity of their own planet, and just see them appear on Earth and just how fast and strong they can move. Yeah. That would be badass.
My only other thought about the Ragnar planet story was I am now on Alki's side, where I think it's just another weakness of the Viltrumites is the Ragnars. I would have loved the idea of Omni-Man hiding the Infinity Ray on that planet because it was protected by Ragnars. And in that case, you don't have to explain some way to get the Ragnars to fight the Viltrumites.
I like that theory.
But again, I'm just totally grasping at straws because it seemed like he was saying that these are all weaknesses. So I don't know if they need to be connected or not, but just wanted to throw that out there in case it hits, then I could take credit, you know? Okay. Now I think it's time for Alan talk, which he is quickly becoming, if he wasn't already, he's definitely a top five character.
Yeah, because he's comedic relief and he's strong. So it's just the best of both.
This is the end of, or I guess the post-credit scene of episode 5 is him waking up, which of course we knew he wasn't going to die. First of all, it's Seth Rogen. He's the executive producer. He's the man. He's funny. He's awesome. Funny because
sometimes like characters have plot armor, but then there's like cast armor.
Yeah. It's like, you know, that's what makes me think Amber has cast armor, because scary.
Yeah.
But this was probably my favorite singular moment of these two episodes was how shocked I was that Thaddeus was actually a good guy. And he is the original and first Viltrumite to rebel against the Empire. And the reason he quote unquote killed Alan was kind of like in the Dragon Ball Z Saiyan way. He wanted to push him to the brink of death. And if he was either going to die, then he wasn't going to be helpful anyway, or he'll recover. And he gets ripped and looks like a fucking beast now.
Yeah.
And he's just jacked. He's like breaking the thing. He's like, oh, that looks expensive. It's so funny, man.
I just love this show because it's a show that time and time again, I just don't expect these twists from just an animated show, you know, just the level of plot and development that the show has put in. It always surprises me when it comes from an animated show, just as being someone who watches Family Guy and American Dad, like those kind of sitcom shows. So because we were questioning whatever his name is, Thaddeus's motives, and it just never clicked with us that
he could have
been a Viltrumite that was rebelling, because we only knew Mark is the only one that was doing that. And the fact that there was only one of Mark was already just such a stretch, but turns out there's two of them. And now we have two Viltrumites ready to fight the Empire. And it's like,
and Omni-Man's probably on our side now.
Well, granted, if he gets his legs to work, if he came back to Earth, we could hook him up with the technology, I'm sure, to walk again.
Yeah.
But Cecil certainly would probably not give him that technology.
Well,
but
they're going to heal him. They say that though.
No, I thought they said they were going to heal him if he decides to rejoin the Empire, but if not, he's just going to be put to death.
No. I mean, I could be wrong about this, but I think they were going to heal him regardless, because they basically said you need to be healed so that you can have like an honorable death. Like, you're going to die either way, but they were going to give him
that doesn't
chance.
Surprise me with knowing what their culture is already. Like, I it feels like an honorable death, you know, Valhalla type of thing would be, but to still give that to a traitor of this proportion, it's surprising. So I guess I had have to go back and look at the quote exactly, but I definitely took it as like, we'll heal you if you join us. Otherwise, we're just going to kill you. But I think it makes sense also where you're coming from with like the cultural side of it. Like, you can have an honorable death. You'll just die going out how you were.
Yeah, we'll check back on that for next podcast so we know for a fact, because that's like, I think the next time we see him, he's going to be healing basically, but we'll see. Yeah, because he's right now, he can't walk.
Important for his character to be able to fly. Like, I'm assuming if he can't walk, he can't fly.
Right, because we actually found out the reason that they can fly, we found this out when he was training Mark, is that they create their own leverage. So they're pushing off.
Oh, right. I forgot.
In the air. So he definitely shouldn't be able to fly unless they kind of break that cannon, which I doubt they will. Okay. So a couple more things, because I want to talk about the scene a tiny bit more, but I guess to get there, let's just keep talking about it now, because that's pretty isolated. So because Alan goes on to tell Mark about the Viltrumite jail, and he's like, I'll ask around to see if Omni-Man's actually there. So Krieg, who was at the end of episode 4 and told Mark basically, like, whatever, he basically took Omni-Man. He's the one that's saying all these things to him. And the quote that I really liked was, Nolan was known as one of the greatest warriors of all time because he conquered hundreds of planets, mm-hmm. which is cool to put that into a scale and actual number. Like, hundreds is just crazy. And he says, like, how did a mere moment on Earth turn you into a weak, sentimental traitor? And that's so true, because he lived centuries. He was there for like a minute. And that was his whole idea about how his mom is like, Mark's mom's like a pet to him, because it's a moment for him. And just that singular moment, and basically having Mark and connecting with him, changed his whole entire personality.
Yeah, I was going to say, it was the singular outlier is Mark.
Yeah.
I don't think he procreated with any species before getting to Earth, and that was the first time he had. And so while I think, yes, there are some feelings for Debbie, I think most of his reasons for betraying the Viltrumites is because of Mark, not Debbie.
Okay, so I've been jumping around a little bit, but just back to the Alan thing. After he gets the Thaddeus reveal in episode 5, he goes to Earth to recruit Mark for their cause, of course. And this is where Cecil shows up and tries to convince the Immortal to take a vacation.
Yeah.
And coincidentally, at the same time, Alan's like on the way to Earth, and he's like, oh my God, like, there's a foreign thing there. So Immortal, just grieving from duplicate and like being all emotional and like he's freaking out, whatever. He says, oh God, it's probably Omni-Man. So he just flies right up to meet Alan. And this is just such a funny scene, just because, first of all, Alan leveled up like a million times now. Like, he is way stronger. I don't even think if Immortal tried to do anything to him, it would have really mattered.
He wasn't even trying. I mean, granted, the only attack Immortal got,
he poked him
in the eye, but Alan's literally pleading with him, like, I'm not here to fight.
Yeah.
So his guard wasn't up.
And Invincible comes at the perfect time to kind of just mediate, but funniest thing ever is when it was just a laugh out loud moment when Invincible tries to talk directly to the Immortal in space without words, and Alan's like, oh yeah, like, it's actually kind of a little bit of a defect, you can only talk to me.
I didn't catch that on the first watch because I was laughing so hard, but
I think it's even
funnier, yeah, that it's a flaw in the system, and that it's an update that will come and they'll be able to eventually talk in certain groups. Like, it's so good, man,
because there's
so
a transplant that he has in his brain that lets him do this in space.
Yeah.
But it's just such a funny moment. And Alan, he calls him a douchebag early on, and then later on he goes, well, now after he finds out Duplicate died his girlfriend, he goes, well, now I feel like a giant douchebag. He's like, you have that term, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to keep using it. It's so good.
Creative geniuses that are writing the show, they need all the money in the world.
After Immortal concedes, he kind of says sorry, and he's like, all right, sorry, bye. Mm-hmm. Boom. And then Alan and Mark go back to his dorm room and really like catch up. It does like a little time skip thing where Mark tells him all about Omni-Man, and then Alan tells him all about Thaddeus. So all the cards are on the table. But the issue is that Alan wants Mark to leave immediately to go help fight the Viltrumites. But of course, that's not going to happen. He's been in space so much recently and helping the world. He needs to kind of get his home life correct. One of the things I liked here is they talk about the comics, and Alan says, like, oh, like, a lot of these are like knockoff of real comics because they're real places. Mm-hmm. So it's like all these connections are coming together. And that's when Mark already says what we talked about already, where this is probably the Viltrumites' weaknesses that Nolan was just laying out there as a backup. And then, yeah, so that's what, any other moments from them catching up?
Nah, it's just Invincible vows that when the fight is about to start, he'll join in. But right now he's not going to. He wants to enjoy his time on Earth, but he does make that vow. So we know he's going to be coming into space soon again.
And Alan was satisfied because that connection of the weaknesses being the book,
he
says, like, I'll scan this.
To bring
it back. And I thought another funny line that Alan has here is after Mark says, I can't come back with you, man. He's like, does this mean we have to fight? And then Alan says, no, I don't fight friends because I would win and I feel terrible. It's just so
now, and he might actually, and we were actually talking about this too while we were watching the episode. We think Alan could probably take Mark right now.
Yes. Otherwise, what's the point of the power jump?
Exactly.
For Alan? He probably is.
Thaddeus literally says you can take on a Viltrumite now. Granted, maybe not Omni-Man level Viltrumite, but any staff member, just, you know, grunt out there, he could probably take
him. He's above the line of being useful in the real world.
Yes.
This is going to suck to go back to this little two scenes because it feels anticlimactic now, but I miss this, was just the isolated Debbie scenes with Cecil and the babysitter stuff.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that I really have is the babysitter obviously made a very good first impression to Debbie and myself, I'll say.
I like her. April Howsome, by the way.
It's just there's always, you know, that thought comes across your mind is, can we really trust? I think she just crushed her first impression so much that it's
scary.
Think that
too good to be true.
Exactly. If she didn't do as well as she was, because she was talking about the whole, she's very knowledgeable or an expert, it seems like, in alien matters as well as childcare matters. So she's just the perfect woman that fell into her lap. She does admit that she's working for Cecil, so she's up front. But again, could there be someone else that she's working for, potentially herself, maybe?
But don't you think Cecil would know about that already?
Yeah, you're probably right, too.
I'm just going to believe that something good's happening here.
What if this is like Cecil's like ex-wife or something? Is that possible?
Cecil might be able to pull. Who knows?
Yeah. Before the facial scars.
Well, okay. So this is actually worth bringing up. I don't know how strong a conviction Alki had for this theory, but the timing of when the previous babysitter left and then this one shows up is like a split second. So Alki's under the impression that this person's a shapeshifter, meaning it could be either a Martian or something else, or it could just be a human. Where you lean on that?
I'm not going to dismiss it. I just think it's just like cartoon timing of just, you know, it's just one of those things that's like, it tries to be funny in the sense that, oh, she just closed the door on this woman and she's going back to the door to kind of yell at her again, but it's a different person. Yes. Like, I think it's more of like a cartoon timing thing. I don't think, but
I'm into the idea of it being a shapeshifter.
I would be too. Yeah.
Okay.
Who's maybe more better about hiding their abilities than shapeshifter himself. And maybe Cecil actually doesn't know, you know, kind of thing. Many possibilities with the show. It's impossible to tell, but
I'm just hoping it's good things for Oliver and good things for Debbie. Because April seems very competent. So but that leaves two more scenes here, and they're both the ending of this episode. The first we already talked about is just the Martian that came back that Shapesmith was impersonating. He had a sequid inside him and he throws it up and now it takes over his mind. That seems like
a
great
break, man. I feel bad for this guy. He just can't catch a break. And immediately too, we also find out that when the sequid takes over your mind, this is like previously in the episode, when they take over your mind, you don't sleep. Like, you're aware of everything that's going on, that you don't sleep. And so this guy, he's like coming home, he's like, I'm finally going to be able to sleep. And then he just isn't going to sleep. So feel bad for him.
I wonder how easily they can replicate sequids, because how quick is this going to just start taking over the world?
That's what I was kind of talking about earlier with the whole, why did we even get a shot of Eve and Robot being infected if something is not going to happen from it? I'll lay it on the table that it is a possibility.
Okay, so here's a question for you then. Do you think this storyline does not come into play until season 3, or do you think this is happening in the next 2 episodes?
Probably, like, I think just because we got the return of this final scene here, I think that's where we're gonna lean. I think we're gonna lean more toward the Angstrom Levi.
It needs plot. To be all about Angstrom the next 2 episodes, I think.
Because we're done with the Lizard League. I mean, I guess the Sequids are still rolling around. Like, what villains are even left at this point?
Look, we haven't seen the twins in 2 episodes either.
Okay, but they're going to definitely be related to the whole Angstrom catastrophe because they were there.
Yeah.
So I think they'll be a part of it.
I don't think Omni-Man's going to interact with Mark again until season 3.
I'll agree with that. I do not think that Omni-Man's going to come back.
I think the next 2 episodes are all about Angstrom.
I hope so. And even if one of them's for Sequids, that's fine. I don't care. I would rather like we just move past, again, not to say that the Sequid story isn't interesting. I think I would rather just move past the Sequid storyline and get into fully the Angstrom storyline.
Let the Sequids build in the background a little bit and then bring
that
to the beginning of season 3 is what I
for think that happened. I think that would probably be the ideal way. But if they were to just like shut this down by the end of next episode, no more Sequids, no problem. That's fine. I am definitely convinced though, episode 8 is going
to
be all Angstrom.
It has to be. Because the buildup has been amazing, like, but it's also they took a break. Like this, okay, so talk me through that last scene of Angstrom, because it's nothing, right?
He's getting suited up and he's like, it's time, I'm going to go see an old friend. And it's cool because he's, you know, portal hopping. He's just walking through to the different dimensions. We see the cold one. We see the tropical one, whatever. And he arrives at what he says is home. And that's kind of what I wanted to specifically bring up is, what does that mean? I'm assuming he means home as in his original timeline, not home as in like, I'm just on the planet Earth home, you know, like his home would be identifying as his Earth, not just Earth as a whole. So he literally just says, I'm home. It's good to be home or something.
I definitely think it just means he's in Mark's universe.
Oh, so you think I'm saying that he's home which would be
where he originally came
Mark
from.
Mark would be evil. Yeah, like the universe that Mark's evil. And I don't know why he would go there. Yeah.
I feel like it only makes sense that he is now ready to take on Mark.
Yeah.
Who he has his vendetta against. But I don't know, because we know, yeah, he's not originally from our universe, because he had to jump over to help the Maulers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what originally happened. So I don't know.
But either way, he's definitely
into that line. I just figured it's time. It's go time.
It's
despite
hard
Mark.
To identify what home is if you're a multidimensional traveler. Like,
and he's all of them too, which is It's cool that he covers his brain, his huge brain up with like that.
The comment that he has when he's getting fitted for the suit is like something to do with his brain too, because it kind of seeps into the back of his neck. Yeah. So it's like kind of hard to find him a collar that works. So like, it's kind of cool.
Yeah. I think build him up as much as possible and like make him devastating in episode 7, and then make episode 8 about Mark fighting him is what I would think is going to happen.
I'm pretty sure, I'm kind of pulling it up now. It looked like it was like a Times Square kind of place, but again, couldn't tell if it was our Times Square, like Mark's Times Square versus, you know, one that maybe is post-apocalyptic or whatever.
Either way, they're not forgetting Angstrom as the main centerpiece of this season, if that is the route they're going to go.
But... Oh yeah. He runs through the zombie universe, which was pretty cool. Oh yeah. Yeah, so this is what it is. It's it is good to be home. And it's just like, I think that's Times Square.
Yeah, there's no, I expect it to see like Mark's poster.
It's probably Mark.
It probably is, but I don't see it. Is there anything relevant on those posters?
No, it's like it looks like it's in a different like language, like not maybe being United States.
Gotcha.
But who knows?
Well, that's it, man. We're back. And I just love this show. I'm sour that the internet's like weird about this just because there was a gap. Like, that's outside of a lot of the writer's decision. So like, everybody should be watching the show. Everybody should be talking about it. It's freaking amazing. I'm going to pull up the IMDb now, but like, last thoughts before we get out of here.
I agree completely. Like, the show is so good. It sucks that we had to have the break, but I'm glad that they have now realized that they're never going to do that again. And they're going to do everything they can in the future to prevent things like that happening. I feel like I'm just getting this is season 3 of 4 episodes. You know, it's just, I wish I could talk more about consecutive episodes, but yeah, let's see those IMDb ratings.
Episode 5 was an 8.9 and episode 6 was an 8.2. So, you know, right there, like, really high quality TV. People loved episode 5. It's one of the top rated of the series. Oh, the thumbnail for episode 7 is a nice Mark and Amber hug.
Yeah.
No.
Sorry. I thought you were saying Eve for a second.
Wish it's Mark and Amber hugging.
Does it look like a sad breakup?
Maybe hug? Angstrom kills Amber.
Oh my god.
And then everybody kind of is just like,
if anything else happens other than that, I'm gonna be pissed.
That would make for the most, that would be like red wedding.
I'm actually
level,
pissed that
like
you thought that through, because I totally could see that happen.
That would be
what if
wild.
They go the opposite direction, they kill Eve.
I'm done with the show.
Yeah, and they're just forcing
this will be
it.
The last you hear me covering Invincible if Eve is dead by the time we're done.
God.
But I think that's it. Any other thoughts?
No, that's it for me.
All right, so that is Bingetown's coverage of Invincible season 2, episode 5 and 6. We will be back after episode 8, the season finale for the second season, comes out. So be on the lookout for that. If you want to catch us anywhere on socials, Twitter, Instagram, X, whatever you want to call it, all that stuff, Bingetown TV, we're the same, YouTube, everywhere. You'll find us everywhere. And if you're interested in hearing some of the other shows we cover right now, I think we just finished covering True Detective recently. We have Traitors on, I think that's a Netflix show that's being covered. Shogun, of course, which is probably the best live action show being filmed or made right now.
Solo Leveling.
Solo Leveling as well. I think a couple things in the pipeline. We got The Bear in a couple months. We have House of the Dragon season 2. Yeah, The Boys. There's a lot in the chamber, and we will be back with Invincible soon. So just a great year for TV so far, and we're just going to keep at it. So I think that's about it. So we're going to get out of here. We are Bingetown TV, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.